Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ameth, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
Let's hear it for the boys because they are back on Prime Video. I'm a boy. I'm Alex.
I, too, am a boy. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
Indeterminate gender, but we'll find out later.
That's
and
right.
As we
don't,
know,
don't
that's
put
fine.
Me in a box.
He's a man.
You
are. He's a man.
Whatever you are, don't put him in a box. And we're going to be talking about Season 2, Episode 2 of Gen V, Justice Never Forgets. If you haven't watched it on Prime Video, please do go check it out. But broad spoilers here, bit of recap. Lots of stuff going down this episode. We kick off with Marie trying to work her way back into Godalkin thanks to TikTok or Instagram Reels. Honestly, I don't know which. I'm not good at identifying social media networks. But
she got a blindness, like a bird blindness for it.
I do. You can't. I can't see them. Is that what you're doing, Pete? Wrong show. That's Peacemaker. That guy is on Peacemaker, I think. I also can't see him. Anyway, she does get back. We meet a lot more folks at Godalkin, including Modesty Monarch, who started the Trad Soup movement. We also later meet the Rememberer, who remembers everything. He runs the library, and Polarity and Emma are teaming up to find out more about what is going on with Cypher, what's going on in Godalkin. We get to see a little bit of the Deep doing some pledging, and Kate wakes up, but her powers seem pretty screwy at the end. Cypher comes
wakes
in,
up says, in a mood, you know? We've all
It's rough when you come out of a coma.
Don't wake me up from a coma until I've had my morning coffee, I always say. Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of other cameos. We got a little bit of Firecracker in there. We find out more about Andre's death. And then the big thing is, very quickly, which was I was surprised about, we find out what Odessa is, and Odessa is Marie. So there you go.
Mystery solved.
Twist.
Season over.
Yeah, case closed.
Also, the dad's
over.
Back.
Polarity.
No, okay.
Yes.
When you said Polarity.
Yeah, he's not doing very well, but he has a mission to, I assume, basically, like, get revenge for Andre. What you guys think about this? Now that we're two episodes in, how you feeling about the season? Still good?
Great. Like, I love this show. Like, not having it and then having it, I really am reminded just how much more is happening in this show than so many other shows that that we watch. There's just the layers, like the Modesty scene, just layering this political commentary with social media commentary, a take on Ballerina Farm, I think, if anyone knows what that is.
I don't know what that is. Please,
that's where they
what
farm
that is.
Out ballerinas. People don't think about it, but
them.
Ballerinas are grown. They're molded. No. They're made.
I believe that's called
just
the Red Room is what it's called.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
The ledger is red. Ballerina Farm is a social media account with this woman who has like a rich husband and then a bunch of kids. And it's very like trad wife. Not as political as it is in this, but like just continually having kids and all that. So like, I don't know. That's what I was reminded of watching that. But those
that
like
doesn't have anything to do with ballerinas or farms, though, is my problem with that.
She's
saying.
A former ballerina. Now she lives in a farm.
Oh, former ballerina. You buried the lead, bro. Jesus, help me out.
I forgot about I need to tell you first
what
about
the
all
fuck?
The dance news that I'm dropping.
I love dance news.
No, exactly.
I feel like the lead was trad wife, but maybe I'm wrong there. I guess.
Okay.
I guess I am. Sorry, Pete.
It depends on what you're listening for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But all that going on, this still has the bones of like a teen show. And and that's really hard to maintain, I feel like. And they're just pros. Every time I watch the show, it's a beautiful object to behold.
Well, speaking of like a teen... go ahead.
I'm being about a sea monarch right now by not talking. Take it away, Pete.
All right, well, I'm just jumping on the teen scene a little bit. I agree, because, like, it reminds me of the kind of, like, when we would watch Riverdale, and I would get the excitement of, like, I have no idea what's going to happen. And, and there's a ton of stuff that are big swings and some great stuff, but the energy about it is great. And I agree with you, this the vibe of the show, the fact that it's going to tackle hard stuff, it can do go anywhere. There's so much happening that excitement, that also kind of teen kind of vibe. I agree with you. I really it's fun to have this show back, and I am very much second episode loving it.
It's very funny that you went for that, Pete, because I thought you were going to go for something else, which is what I was going to say. Instead, you have equated being a teen with being excited, which, I don't know, probably a little bit to dig into.
No, I'm
there.
Talking about teen shows in general. It's like, who are they dating? You know, it's that young energy a little bit. You know,
well,
what I mean?
No, no, no. It's like back when we were teens, when we were happy. That's what you're getting at, right, Pete?
Yeah, like, I mean, still
Alex, believe like, you're calling him out for that, but I think that is true, technically. That's the whole basis of all music and most of life.
Yeah, there's potential to life.
Have you ever heard of something called Americana?
There used to be.
That's literally built around.
Because what I was going to call out was the romance. Like, there's a great amount of romance going on in this episode, particularly the scene with Marie and Jordan. That, to me, was the thing that, like, nailed that teen show vibe. It's really romantic when they're sitting there and talking like, about truly. Andre and flirting. Yeah. I wrote down the lines. Me like this, is that okay? And then anything and everything you do is okay. Yeah. Is like,
I thought that was, you know what? Here's that line I thought was like romantic, like hot.
Beautiful. Yeah.
While also being like, they took the time to let her just literally say it slowly to have more effect. It was just a performance and a direction and a choice that the show made that I thought was really good.
Yeah,
and
they purposely sat in that moment in a nice amount of time. Yeah,
it was
powerful and beautiful.
Teen excitement.
Yeah.
And again, Alex, if you don't understand teen excitement, how you should try out like 70, like I'm going to send you the name Bob Seger. You should check out that.
Do teens like this Bob
Seger
guy?
Send you the name? I'm going to
send you the name. Again, I can't see social media. Is he like hot on TikTok or something like that? Like a TikTok artist.
I just picture
Alex check out
going
that sound.
You go to the mail and it's just a note that says, check out Bob Seger.
It's written in blood. I send that out to a lot of people. It's part of like a newsletter, but written in blood. It's like a Substack, but it's a blood stack. Mm. That's not a bad idea, actually. What I was going to say is, you know, I've criticized a lot of television shows, amongst them most perhaps Invincible, for having the nastiest, most direct, bad needle drops in the game. And a lot of shows are bad at it. This show has the softest, most chilled out needle drops. That is so much better. It's not even needle drop. It's like a needle slide.
It's like music? And a needle slide.
Just playing what music. Well, it's a needle slide. I'm trying out a lot
Did you say needle slop or needle slide?
Needle because, slide.
Okay. Needle slop implies something very different. I feel like that has a negative connotation. We're trying to coin a term, Pete, so that we can capture some of that
we've
excitement.
We've gone off the
intensity.
Rails so fast. It's insane.
It's
welcome
funny you think
to
we're
the
off rails. I'm making one of my most important points about this episode that you think is far off the rails. That this show uses music in a way that the music at the top of the episode I thought was really fun in a satirical, like making fun, sarcastic way. Mm-hmm. And then the song that plays underneath the romance into sex scene that we're talking about I thought was also very well done. It started playing like as if it was on diegetically on a radio or on off of a computer, and then it just turns up a little bit. It was great. Really great.
I would also throw out there, just to stay on the scene for a second, and I know we mentioned this the last episode, contrary to the joke we were making about who was a boy at the beginning of the episode, the show very laudably allows Jordan to just exist, you know, and particularly in the world right now when there are people of different genders and embracing different genders, particularly trans, but I would throw that out to anybody who doesn't identify specifically as masculine or feminine, but embraces different things there. The fact that this show exists on TV, obviously we don't know how the ratings are, but The Boys is huge.
Yeah.
Is important. Like, it is important to see this, even though it is in a superhero, supernatural type context, to have this show out there and existing and letting everybody accept it, I think, is really important. So I'm glad to see that. So shouts to the show.
I would double that shout down by even saying it's not just having a character that has that where gender fluidity is like baked in so hard, like it's not a choice, which I think is a conservative talking point for so many people. Mm-hmm. That it's also we get inside the perspective from that perspective. And I think a lot of shows that are like, look, we're showing gender fluidity, but it's just seen and not show, not experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and this show does that from a way that I think is much more, there's an emotionality to it that lets you in on it more. And again, this is my outside perspective, but I really appreciate that, especially in this episode.
Well, and just to sort of wrap this up, I would also throw out, versus the fact that we've spent a couple of minutes here talking about it, the show just lets it be, at least exactly. In this episode, which I think is all the more important, because like you're saying, Justin, you know, I think TV has gotten a little better at it for the most part, but there was certainly a time when, like, you would introduce a lesbian or gay character on a TV show, and that's literally all they were. They were lesbian, they were gay, that was their entire character and identity. Yeah. The fact that there's a lot more stuff going on with Jordan from both of their identities, and it's just a character that is there, that's great. It's really good.
Speaking of Let It Be, that bee lady like hawking up honey. I mean, I love honey, but I wouldn't eat that.
You know, that's what I mean?
So that's Stacy, the student life director. And
right.
This is great. Like this is another thing that I think The Boys does so well is when she first showed up, I was like, this is sort of another Ashley type character. Exactly what you're saying, Pete, just the points of like her having the stinger sticking out, and that's kind of gross, her hawking up honey. Just layering these characters in the background, it's such, just to like blast it back for a second, it's such an important part of comedies that I feel like so few comedies figure out immediately. They're so focused on their core cast, they forget that what makes it a better comedy is fleshing out the weirdos on the side of the world. It makes your main character stronger. And The Boys got that immediately. Gen V gets that immediately. And I think Stacy is exactly that. Like, I don't need to see an entire Stacy-focused episode, but the fact that she shows up every a couple of episodes and adds another thing onto her character game makes it such a richer, better world.
Well, and plus it's like heightening something that we all know is annoying, like, that person in the real world is gross and obnoxious, and then they just take that and you use bee specifics to heighten it is so good. And I think we have a Chekhov stinger that was introduced in the first 100%. Episode. Like that lady's stinging somebody, and she's like, "No, he's gonna die right after," and that's gonna be great.
Yeah, that will be great. And I do think, like, you know, because the show does, the range of stuff is impressive. Like, there's beautiful moments. There's also, you know, gross stuff that we're talking about. And then there's the invisible guy taking a shit. And it's like, man, the show, you know, now I'm like, well, is his shit going to be clear? Or is it going to, like, once it comes out, then you can see it? And I'm just like, God damn the show. Like, the fact that I'm thinking about this, it's, you know, it's impressive the range of insanity, but also beautiful moments.
I would think it would be invisible.
Really?
Because it was invisible in the show. You don't see
it. But it's not part of his body, right?
A lot of
it
is.
It's waste material. But it wasn't. It was waste material from food. Do you know how shit works?
Well, I'm just saying it becomes a part of your organs. Right? You know, once you
eat it, does not become a part of you. Like, it's very specifically not a part of you.
I mean, there is some.
Right, you take out the stuff you need and then you expel the rest. That's what
I'm just saying. You kind of use it. It's with some, you know.
Is garbage part of your garbage can, Pete?
My garbage plate is a part of me.
No, it's not.
That's what his t-shirt reads, Alex, if you look at it.
My garbage plate is a part of me.
Right. I would say though, Alex, to take the contrarian position,
sure, like, please.
There's a lot of like stomach acid. There's biology from your body that does get very much mixed in with the food waste coming out that I think might make it at least partially invisible.
For sure. I feel like I can agree. I could cede the territory that there will be invisible chunks in this man's shit.
Yeah, you sure? You're going to see some floating corn, just like us. And that's what I get seen. Oh, I've seen man. In this show. There's going to be some loose corn and tomato husks.
Oh, and here's on, the man. Thing. I know Pete's going to be a like, we're going tooth, off the rails. Man. But this sort of thing... This sort of thing is exactly the sort of thing that the boys actually at Gen V would actually do. So, like, it's very much on the rails. I just want to do a rail check here.
Rail check.
Rail check. First rail check of the season.
Good.
Let's talk about Cypher and hero optimization, which is something I skipped over in the recap. This seems like a big thing with this character. We were certainly questioning what's going on with him, what's his secret, what's his powers. We don't find out too much about that in this episode, but we do get to see his seminar, which pits Marie and a bunch of other students against, I couldn't quite catch it, but like a big Viking dude called Vikort or something like that.
Vikor, yes, Vikor.
Vikor. And all they got to do is get to the other side of the room and press a button. Not a great class, but a good action scene,
I would say. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's how some like pre-calculus feels them.
What'd you guys think about this? Like, what did you take away from, since I think like Cypher's motivations are one of the big mysteries of the season for sure, very clearly. What do you take away from this class? What do you take away from what was happening in the sequence?
It makes me miss college. I mean, I never forget my first class when I walked in, teacher just shut the door, you know, floor drops out, all these spikes, you know, pick your weapons, you know, just got to make it to the button on the other side. So, yeah, I mean, it's nice to see some things that haven't changed.
Pete, you went to college at Skeletor's Castle, right?
That's right. Yeah, Snake Mountain.
Yeah, Snake Mountain.
And how was that? Close,
you're still pretty close with Skunkor, right?
Ah, dude, Skunkor's my boy, bro. Come on.
Yeah, really good. And you, one day you will kill He-Man, right?
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, don't give away all my plans.
As soon as we find out who he really is, he's dead.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Hey, I got a little clue for you. Check out Prince Adam. He seems to share a lot of quality.
No, dude, that guy's lazy. He's always sleeping with his cat, you know, just like not really under a tree.
Have you ever noticed Bat-Cat and Cringer have a similar, I don't know, stripes?
How dare you? Two completely different cats just because there is a similar... Oh, man, that's cat racism right there.
Nice. Well, jumping back to the fight with Vikor, what I liked about this from a sort of meta textual point of view, like this was like Professor X's danger room if it was real and more aggressively ran. So that I thought was really cool. Great take on X-Men.
Plus, it's a nice kind of like, I don't know what the professor's evil plan is, but it's good for our team to try to work together, work on their powers, figure stuff out. So there's an evil plan that I'm not aware of, but it's good to see them kind of like learning to work together and use their powers. So that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder where it's going. Like, there's not a lot of give from Cypher per his name. Like, he very much is a Cypher, but... maybe it's like creating his own seven or something like that.
It seems like it's like, hey, listen, if the, you know, I don't know if you're paying attention to the boys, but seven members go down left and right. So we need people to fill in.
Well, I mean, that's the feeder for God You, right? Like the top ranking people have an opportunity to potentially get on the seven. But
yeah, that's the whole rankings.
We haven't seen him talk about that. Like he hasn't really talked about Vought Tower. He hasn't talked about... I don't think he's talked about Homelander too much or anything like that. So I don't know. I wonder if he's like running his own thing.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out there that I think it's more of a separate paramilitary unit or something that he's working on creating that feels cultural commentary wise, like ICE, that feels like very much in the air and maybe something they would want to do here. And it just seems too simple that it would just be like, yes, you're good enough to join the Seven, something we've already seen literally last season. So it does feel like that's going to be part of an overall plan for him. Cypher, I do think Marie even says like, there's a pretty solid chance he knows everything. And I think that's accurate. Whatever his powers are, he seems very invulnerable, like we talked about, but he also seems like hyper aware. That's why I do think it's going to be something social media or algorithm based, where he can somehow hear everything from.
He can cipher people's powers and thoughts and.
You mean siphon.
Like siphon, yeah.
They should call him Siphon, honestly.
Yeah, they should change his name to Siphon. Yeah.
Yes. As a slightly related thing, I wanted to throw out something that we talked about on the last episode that I threw out was a concern about, like, Gen V and the boys are usually, like, scarily prescient because they film these shows a year in advance in terms of where we are in America. And I was talking about how would it relate to universities, given the situation that universities are in being monetarily attacked by the Trump administration. And I had a little thought about it since we talked about the last episode, and I think it's not one-to-one, but they are still kind of right on the money in terms of fear on college campuses is what they're getting at here. And that isn't something they necessarily could have known about back when they were crafting the show two summers ago, I guess, at this point. But I think it works. Like, what I've come around to is I think, like, it's close enough that it does feel like it's right on the money. But what were you going to say, Justin?
And let me throw this is – I don't know if this is true, but there's a line when we're going from the modesty monarch scene into the Danger Room scene where you hear an ADR line that is like, didn't this used to be Big Chief Apache's diversity seminar, the room that they want? Diversity and inclusion seminar, and that felt like an added line later that perhaps recently that's commenting on how DEI across the country has been eradicated.
Smart. Yeah, good catch.
That felt like something that they added because it's literally right there. They did all the work, and then they were like, you know what? If we add this line, it feels like this came out, you know, today about this. Like, we shot this today to make this point about what's happening in colleges. So I really like that. And there's, like you're saying, they're so prescient. The intertwining of, in the Modesty Monarch scene, of conservative talking points, the superhero metaphor, and the social media commentary in that scene especially is so, it's just next level. It's like the writers of the show just live inside this bubble and seem so excited to make these points, and it just lands so hard for me.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Emoji moment from Sadie, who writes, I'm not crying, you're crying. This is what I said during my first appointment with my physician at Mochi, because I didn't have to convince him I needed a GLP-1. He understood, and I felt supported, not judged. I came for the weight loss and stayed for the empathy. Thanks, Sadie. I'm Myra Ameth, founder of Mochi Health. To find your Mochi moment, visit joinmochi.com.
Sadie is a Mochi member compensated for her story.
I will throw out one contrary thing, though, that I just... It's played for comedy, so I'm not too upset about it. But Marie doing the TikTok or reel or whatever she was doing at the top of the episode, and Emma directing her, very funny scene and being like, give me more, but less.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
But I don't buy that anybody would buy Marie on that video, because she's very clearly like, hey, guys, what's going on? And again, it's funny. It's a comedy. It's fine. I'm not upset about it. But like, trying to think about her having a crazy amount of social media followers and the idea in the real world that everybody analyzes every single video from every single celebrity nonstop, there would be a million articles maybe like, Marie, do you have a gun to your head right now? And that's kind of where they would go from there.
But here's my bounce back on that. I don't think they were – the commentary wasn't, this is real. I feel like they were making fun of the fact that everyone's apology video – does look like they have a gun to their head and they're saying they're that's being part forced of the to joke. Say that because that's part of the it felt like a very purposeful take.
State name feel very bad about
we're gonna film your apology video after this. So you're just diving into it.
Your apology is like
We have to do a lot of them, I think, today, right? Six?
Yeah. Well, today we're going to tape the one where Pete apologizes to Rails, I believe is what we're going for.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I understand it's important to be both on and off the rails at different points in your life. Yeah. I was being rail-centric.
I want to talk about polarity because Pete brought him up earlier. Yeah. And I actually want to kick it over to Pete since you seem pretty excited to have him back. How do you feel? This to me feels like this will be the most emotional storyline over the course of the season, just by the nature of him being Andre's dad. And since we haven't mentioned it yet, I think we were wondering about this or talking about this in the first episode, if I recall. But like, I think they did a really good job of continuing to thread the loss of Chance Perdomo through this episode, particularly through Polarity's storyline. Pete, how'd you feel about that?
Yeah, Andre. It still hangs over. And I love the choice of dad just kind of being like, hey, you know, fuck you. You know, like, how dare you come at me and saying things that I should be doing? Like, I just lost my son. Like, you know, I liked him taking a beat and then kind of realizing, okay, I need this. Like, this is important. And then coming back. And, you know, we saw... you know, even though she was really high on Molly, her so excited to see him and be like, oh, an adult, thank God, like, this is so crazy, was just such a great moment. And I felt like that we were kind of the audience, too, of like, yeah, they need help here big time. And I just happy with the way that that all kind of went down of like, him initially just like, you know, too torn up to even be kind of talking or kind of considering anything, and then kind of realizing like this is the best thing forward, not only for what they're trying to do, but also for him. So, yeah, I just think it was a really smart choice, really well done and supremely acted. Feeling great about all that.
I agree. I really liked these scenes, and I like Polarity's spot in the mix. I thought it was going to be a longer, like, he's going to be the point person on solving the Odessa mystery, but already done, guys. well done.
Check.
I really liked how they incorporated that Andre hadn't told them about his powers killing him, mm-hmm. and that it was like he knew pushing himself that hard would kill him. I thought that was like just another fold to add into the story while still dealing with the idea of Chance's death over the hanging over the show. It did strike me, pulled out a little bit from the show when I was like, oh, was this arc or this scene with Emma supposed to be Andre with Emma?
Exactly. That was exactly what I was about to say. I think it's a little unfair to speculate about this stuff.
Agree.
But we had thoughts, so we have to say them out loud here on our
podcast. You don't have to.
We have to.
I say all of them.
I think they've done a really good job of rejiggering it, but 100%, particularly once they get to the library, I was like, this was Andre and Emma. This definitely, because they like, as far as we know, they wrote the scripts. I think maybe they had written the entire season.
I bet. Because they were filming when he passed, correct?
I believe they were going to go back into production. Then they delayed production so that they could rejigger the scripts. So they did, at least in this episode, more than just like a find and replace of names. But for sure, given the way Polarity's storyline was going, I think he was probably going to be more of a emotional thing for Andre potentially in season two. And now... they have not necessarily one-to-one, but I think put Polarity in Andre's place. But like Pete called out, I think what they very smartly did was changed it so that Polarity is the adult in the room now, and that is reassuring. So they did a really good job with that sub in an impossible situation, but I totally agree with you.
Honestly, and it's more, you know, this is what, when things happen and change things, it, you know, can, it changes them irrevocably. And I actually think this is more interesting than just a split up, just talking about characters, not talking about Chance at all. Like if it was just Andre and Emma doing this, they probably both would have been fucked up.
Yeah.
They probably would have both taken the pills. And that would have been like maybe funny, but this would had much more layer to it, I thought, and was an interesting combining of characters that like wouldn't really like she was being very close with him because she was rolling. And he was like being like, OK, like sort of like half in half out, which I thought it added just a nice dynamic, especially when he tries to, she's bad at charming the rememberer, and then she's great at just being.
Oh, that was just hysterical.
And it just made the dynamic really
nice. I also liked that lit him up so much he started writing, you know, like that was such a fun mm-hmm. choice that like he got so excited. He's like, yeah, yeah. And then he's like, I'm going to crank out some, you know, like, oh, such a great, but man, Emma was so funny in that whole thing, like the start of it too, where she's like, you ever notice how great hands are? Just such
yeah, a like, and that's why I like that he's like, wait, are you fucked up? That's something anyone would say.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that I will throw out there, I hope they don't go this route that I'm a little worried about, is I hope they don't go teacher-student relationship there. Like,
yeah, I don't think so.
Well, I don't think they will, but definitely, I don't know. There's always that temptation, like we were talking about with team shows, to go that route. And I think as we've seen over the years, that's not good, but I could see them being like, we're both fucked up, that happening, we do a fucked up thing, oops. But hopefully not. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I did think the funniest moment in the episode was Emma when she grows huge, when she's excited and she's totally nude and does the pew-pew-pew with her boobs.
That was the funniest part. Love it.
No, dude, the funniest line was, fuck off, you don't have a dick. That was hysterical.
See, it's funny. I thought the funniest line was the from the rememberer, the only mind I trust to write it is my own. When he's writing his
The rememberer is so good. Just in general, like I was saying earlier about bit things fleshing out the world. It's such a smart parody of all of these very specific cop shows with like The Mentalist or whatever else. Having the rememberer be the most annoying person ever is great. I hope we see more of him.
Again, taking something from reality and just heightening it a little bit to call out how stupid it is. That it's like, oh, this detective remembers stuff? And it's like, that's most shows now.
Yeah.
And I also loved his line when he's writing. He's like, Hoppe doesn't know it. The like number one clammiest trope in the world. Great.
Character we haven't talked about yet, Sam. How do we feel about Sam? He's starting to tweak without Kate, like we speculated about with the first episode. We only get a little bit of him, but what do you think? He feels very external to this season right now. I'm curious how he gets folded in.
Well, I think, as you know, Sam and Emma are going to, you know, like Emma's going to fold him in a little bit. I feel like they really had something. And, you know, because he got brainwashed, that got sidetracked. So hopefully that can get kind of back on track.
It's interesting you say that, because I thought that too, but I thought the scene between them where he's threatening her, she, and yes, she was still fucked up, but like, I didn't see any love in her eyes. She was legitimately scared of him. And he was like, you know, his dealer got killed or almost got killed. So like, he needs her back, and he's going to have to go through some sort of emotional withdrawal overload situation once all of that comes rushing back and he doesn't have Kate to wait.
Well, Kate's alive, so.
But her powers are kill now. which, talking about jumping back to that scene was got me. That was really alarming, I thought, when the lady, it was like horror movie, really well done, just like out of nowhere, intense scene.
You want to talk about a got me scene when the fucking hammer guy is beating his own heart back to life?
Love.
Holy shit, did that get really me? I was like, oh my God, what a fucking.
Such a smart idea of how to counteract Maurice shutting his heart down, and he just keeps it going.
God, that was so.
Badass.
Speaking of Marie, we should talk about Odessa. Like, what do you think? What's your speculation on what it means that Marie is Odessa? What does that mean for the show? What does that mean for Marie? What can we
I think she's from Odessa.
Oh, the city.
Mm. Yeah.
Russia or the one in, like, Texas?
Texas.
Oh, great. Big revelation.
Twist. Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to find out all the origin cities of everyone.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the scene earlier when Cypher's talking to them, he's like, how do your powers work? And she's like, I don't know. I move blood around. And he's like, uh-huh. I feel like Odessa is potentially a step in evolution in the V, the formula, where a lot of everyone's powers are like, you do this one thing and it makes sense. You turn invisible because your skin, like, I feel like they maybe don't know how her powers work because it's not really scientific. It's you know, she can't move water. She can't move iron per se. She moves blood. That's a weird idea from a science perspective and a power set perspective. So I think they're really studying her here, and that there's something with the way her powers work that is an evolution of the V formula.
So it's not going to be an acronym type of situation is what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, maybe.
I mean, we should probably look up what Odessa is other than a city, because I'm sure there's a hint there and I have not done that yet. But it definitely ties back to that scene right at the beginning of the first episode with Ethan Slater as Dr. T. Godalkin. I think, let me look back at my notes. I think that was in like the 1967. So time-wise, unless Marie is much older than we think she is, doesn't necessarily make sense there. But it seems very pointed that like they had that with Ethan Slater getting horribly burned, everybody exploding. And then we have this scene of Marie finding out she's Odessa. So perhaps the project continued past that point. Yeah. How it is connected, maybe it turns out the way you're saying.
Well, I would think it was Godalkin was responding to the disaster that he witnessed and almost died from. And maybe he, like, we have to make this a certain way different so that it doesn't just have tentacles bursting out of the tight buttholes of your friends.
I like that idea that they're trying to figure out a way of having V that they purposefully can control the powers. That's what you're saying that people get versus like it's very random based on almost absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. We also get a big scene. I mean, it's a little scene, but I think big and important for the world of the boys. We find out that Dog Knot has killed the Starlighter that Marie befriended. That's pretty rough. I mean, I guess good that Dog Knot is alive because he's a pretty gross, interesting character. But real
not excited the about Dog Bomb thing. Being love.
No,
you don't. No, I don't like
get
dog
together
bomb.
With that dog.
No, definitely not.
Interesting.
Interesting. Anti-dog from a
But yeah, that definitely is like continue that and also getting to see Firecracker with the bomb. But like there was an E missing, I think. So I don't know. They changed the show, or I guess that was it.
She's really getting into the correspondent. Like, you know, her news show is really taking off.
Yeah, good for her. Good for her. We all love Firecracker. But I don't know. Really again, great. Like we talked about with the first episode, we continue to see, like, this feels very heavily tied to where the boys left off in a very specific way. It's not just internal to the university. It's very external to what's happening in the United States.
Definitely. And I love the propaganda aspect of that and the pushing it toward anti soups versus humans, which, you know, I don't know if that's going to, that feels like that's going to be paid off in the boys and not here necessarily. That's cool. And again, that's something that I don't know what, from a goal perspective, like why would all the soups want to kill all the humans? Like, it doesn't make sense. So that's an interesting empty idea. Like a lot of modern political movement ideology, it's like, you want what? And everyone's like, I don't know, I'm mad. And that's what it feels like is happening here. I like that reflection because it's terrible.
I also wanted to throw out on the greater world of the boys front, the cameo by the Deep doing pledging I thought was great.
And I it's just great love because the Deep.
Well, but he's also exactly the sort of dweeb that would constantly come back for pledge week at his college to be king of the world. So it works. So it wasn't just like, I feel like sometimes with these cameos, it could be like, oh, who's available? Who can we get? But actually tying it to the character, actually making it work, have a reason for him to be there that makes him even sadder and dweebier, I thought was great. Good stuff.
Yeah, agreed. Loved seeing him.
Any other moments from the episode that you guys want to call out?
Yeah, I just the, you know, the use of the title phrase as the two of them both did the Justice Never Forgets, like, shh moment. We talked about how great they were, but just that line was really just so fun to kind of have that joke within the joke kind of thing happening with the title. So great.
And I want to give a big shout out to Weehawken. This is the most that anybody has ever talked about Weehawken on television this episode. So that must
you want to keep that alive. Like, let's see.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Great city.
Oh, man. Yeah, I definitely think they're going to want to be remembered for being the site of a near murder.
Yeah. I mean, the Weehawken Township in New Jersey, of course, is home. It's known for its iconic postcard-worthy skyline views of Manhattan, and its historical significance is the site of a famous duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr, as we all know.
Oh, right. From Hamilton. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. This is the modern Hamilton Burrs when they almost
everything is
eight.
Legal in New Jersey. Anything else?
Or well, we didn't talk about the secret museum of racism that they discovered.
No, the back room of the library with all the Nazi memorabilia.
Nazi yeah. Klan stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Weird surprise there.
Gross. Yeah. I mean, that definitely, I think, points to we don't know a lot about Gedalkin University and maybe finding out more about its origins, given that we got Dr. T. Gedalkin at the beginning of the season. So probably, like the rest of the boys' world, it's based in Nazi ideology. That's not too much of a surprise. But yeah, it's shocking to see it.
Yeah.
All right. Awful. Why don't we wrap up by talking about what we want to see in the next episode? This is going to be the final of the three episodes that debut on premiere day. So as you all are listening to this, maybe you've already seen it and we sound like crazy people in this episode. But let's get a little speculation.
Everyone will know the answer to right now. My favorite.
Yes, exactly. Well, Justin, what do you want to see in the final batch of these three episodes here?
Well, the big question coming out of this episode for me is, are they going to fold Sam and Kate back into the team? Like, will they be able to make up after, like, a true unimaginable betrayal that happened at the end of last season? But it does feel like we're following them. It feels like Sam feels important, despite the fact that Emma was just pure scared of him. It does feel like Kate, it feels like he might come back in. Kate, I don't know, maybe now that her powers are flipped a little bit, she's going to be more less of a someone who's just taking advantage of people and more someone that needs help, or her powers change enough where she can maybe be more chill and be more on the side of the right. So I want to see the next step in that, because it does feel like for whatever happens, they need to get the team together before they can move into the next phase.
Well, just to throw out there, one thing that dreading is probably too strong of a word, but it feels like they're probably going to go for an amnesia storyline for Kate, which is crazy and soap opera-y, because she knows that Jordan, Marie, and Emma basically left her for dead. So if she knows that, how does she come back and, like, not say that? Or do they need to go through more narrative loops of propaganda to be like, no, this is why it was heroic, which we're sort of stretching that particular thing a little thin by the fact that they're back at the university at all and everything is mostly fine. So I don't know. I'm a little tentatively worried about how this plot line is going to play out, because there's a lot of different ways it potentially could go wrong.
Well, to take the teen show of it all, it feels like it could easily be like, I know I screwed you guys over, but you let me die almost. So we're even. Let's be friends again.
Yeah.
Like, that feels very like kid logic of how to deal with a heavy emotional trauma.
Yeah, so I just worry based on like Kate lying there and not saying anything that it's like she lost her speech function or she's amnesiac and forgot that they attacked her or something like that. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Could be.
Pete, what about you? Alex, they brought up a good point. You were like Kate and then not say you think Kate's a Nazi is what you're saying. I think that, yeah, I would like to see if Kate can control her powers and not kill people, if she's got kind of what's going to happen with her powers. And then also the more from the how does Odessa equal Marie, you know. But I'm also excited to see if the plan – now that they know what Odessa is, what's going to be the plan and how the dad's going to help moving forward, because we need the dad.
Should we go to Odessa, Texas, Pete, to see if your theory is right?
Yeah, let's show up, man. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna go to the other Odessa, so like I'll Zoom with you guys. I'll FaceTime.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah, FaceTime. Work on this. Oh, good.
Yeah, that's I know really what that cool. is. It's not social media. Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Gen V, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you in Weehawken.
Weehawken. We hawking loogies on your face.
We hawking up that honey.
Oh. Ooh.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.